It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And auxiliary co-host, David Redfield, is here.
Booyakasha.
So, I am going to completely renege on what I said last week. Last week, I said we would cover San Diego Comic-Con.
Nope.
We still haven't, because this happened last year. Last year, we were in the middle of covering San Diego, and the Wolverine came out, and we covered that. This year's even bigger, because Guardians of the Galaxy came out on Friday, or technically Thursday,
yeah.
And it was projected to make $70 million. It is so far about to make $94 million. So chances are you've seen it. There will be spoilers, and chances are these won't be spoilers for you because you've seen it.
Yes. But there are spoilers coming.
Yeah, I don't think we can talk about this without spoilers.
So when the death chart, the death, what's that ship from Star Wars called?
The Death Star?
When that thing blew up at the end, crazy. Crazy.
It was on loan.
I feel like that would have worked if you knew the name of the Death Star.
That's all right. It still works. What did you guys thoughts?
Well done, Marvel. Well done.
I loved it. I fell in love with it in the first scene. And I actually had kind of a distracted experience because we brought both boys to the movies, and we've learned that...
Wait, both boys? Like the baby?
Yeah, well, he had slept. He slept through, like, the Lego movie,
yeah.
And he slept through, like, any of the kids' movies we took him to, and now he's just a little too big.
Do you have to buy him a ticket?
No. So we sit on the end, and we put the car seat in the end, and he slept through a couple movies, and I've never wanted to be, you know, the stupid parents who have a crying baby through the middle of a movie.
Yeah.
So Renee and I knew the deal. Like, if he starts making noise, we just take him out and just start making noise at the coming attractions. And she missed a good chunk of it, and we've learned, all right, we need babysitters now.
Yeah.
But so part of me was like, hey, where are they? Are they coming in and out? And then Ben also ate way too much candy right away and then was, like, vibrating all over the aisle. So, and then by the end of the movie, like, Renee hadn't sat down at all. She was, like...
Walking the baby.
The baby was quiet, but she was kind of walking the baby in, like, the hallway on the side. And finally, I'm like, look, you need to sit down. It's been, like, an hour and a half. So then the last half an hour, I'm, like, in the back of the movie theater with the baby. He's sleeping.
Yeah.
So I want everybody to know we're not the jerk parents that have the crying baby in the movie theater. But I had, like, five things going on the whole time. And I still love this movie.
Yeah.
Like, I was surprised I could pay attention to it, but I was able to completely lock in and follow it. Dave, what'd you think?
I had fun. And it was much needed fun, especially in the movie theaters, because it's just, most of the movies, I feel, especially in sci-fi, they have to be just sad and, like, dark. And even though we had those moments here in Guardians, and most of those moments are being represented by CG characters, the fun was still there through and through. I mean, who would have thought that, like, well, obviously, but just pitch this. It's just there's a raccoon and there's a tree, and they're going to be CG'd. And those are two of the, what, five characters?
Yeah.
In your main ensemble. And it happened, and so many people had doubts. And we all thought, we were all going, like, this is a huge gamble for Marvel.
Yeah, we've been saying that on the show for months.
And then the fact that...
Especially because nobody really knows this book. This book was never a big seller. And Steve and I both went back and read the book. David, did you read the Abnett Lanning run?
Actually, yeah, I'm a huge fan of Guardians of the Galaxy. I've been a fan since Annihilation. That's when I got into all the Marvel.
That's when this team was formed.
And and so I read that, and I fell in love with, because Abnett Lanning was doing such a great job, I fell in love with Marvel Space. I started reading older stuff too, like the old previous Guardians of the Galaxy in the 70s. And it was such a, I just loved it, because at the time Marvel was coming out with Civil War, and I was just kind of tired of superheroes fighting superheroes for no reason.
Yeah, it was going on at the same time.
Yeah,
and so, because that didn't sell as well, because most fans budget was tapped out with Civil War tie-ins.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like for me to be able to buy Annihilation and just get away from all that and just find out the epicness of Marvel Universe. I mean, when the Guardians formed, I was like, I remember reading a Nova issue and they're like, hey, we need to form this like Guardians of the Galaxy, and Nova's trying to explain it to Peter Quill, and it's like, hey, it's like King Arthur and Knights of the Round Table. And then it's like, all right. And when I got that, like Knights of the Round Table in space, I was like, let's do this. Because yeah. The original, like that team at that moment was Peter Quill, Gamora, Drax. I don't know if Rocket and Groot showed up, but we had Quasar and
Adam Warlock
and Moondragon. And they added like other people too. And it was just like a good sense of these great historic Marvel cosmic characters.
Well, that's another part of the gamble of this movie, because this movie is not that. We were talking before. I kept stopping the conversation because we were saying a lot of things that should be said or should be recorded. But one of the problems with the Guardians of the Galaxy, it was never a big seller. It was always a B-list title. Doesn't have anybody really big in it. And this movie doesn't really follow those books very closely at all.
Yeah, it's not... Yeah, but I mean the same is true about like Avengers, is that there's no like one book you could point to where like Loki grabs a Skrull ripoff army and teams up with a guy in Thanos. It's I guess it's good that the movies are kind of doing their own thing. But you could grab like the first volume of like the new Guardians of the Galaxy book that came out during the Marvel Now and like jump right in, and they've got all the characters and they act just like they do in the movies. I think what's really interesting is Marvel, the best thing about this movie actually happened months and months and months ago. I don't know if you guys remember, there was all the announcements about what the next Superman Batman movie was going to be, and then they were like, is it a Justice League movie? Wonder Woman's going to be in it. Who are they going to cast? And should they do a Wonder Woman movie? It's like everyone was just talking about all this stuff that this next big like DC movie was going to be. And then the trailer for Guardians hit, and it was like DC's just like sitting there like, Justice League, we don't know what we're doing. And the Marvel's like, here's a rocket raccoon and a tree that talks, and you're welcome. Yeah. And it was just like game on. And then the movie, even from all those trailers, were phenomenal. The movie was phenomenal.
The trailers were turning me around. I remember saying on the show when you guys were all excited about it, I was like, yeah, we'll see. And then that trailer got me excited.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the last time that I felt differently about a movie before the trailer and after the trailer.
Yeah.
Usually I don't care. Trailer happens. I still don't care. Or I'm super excited, you know, and then I see the trailer and I go, yeah, it's really happening.
Yeah.
This was like, I don't think I care. At the end of it, I really want to see it. And it lived up to the trailer.
Yeah, the trailer was perfect, I think, because it was the way it started out with like we do this thing now in movie trailers where I think Christopher Nolan's at blame here because of Inception. He said like, like that foghorn like sound. So like the trailer starts and he's got like that sound, and like Star-Lord's in this like cave and he's like got this light and he's looking for this thing, and you're like, whoa, this is like a really big serious like movie, what is this? And then he's like, who are you, Star-Lord? Who? And it was just like, it totally just brings it back to like fun, awesome, like enjoyment that a lot of the superhero movies that miss the mark don't do.
And that moment worked so well that was in every trailer, that was in every commercial, and when it happens in the movie,
it was still perfect.
It still works.
Yeah,
and same. It's just like I can't stress enough how great it is to just have a fun movie for you to go and just have a good time and leave.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the thing. Like I said, like you know, of course, Batman has that serious tone Christopher Nolan set, and DC. And Warner Brothers is like, well, it sold very well, so we're going to stay to that tone. Yeah. And we got Man of Steel in that tone. And that's...
And it didn't
Man
work.
Of Steel, like, Superman doesn't need that tone. Like, he doesn't need that, like, realistic, the world is really bad, and, like, destruction and everything like that. And obviously, Guardians of the Galaxy, they don't need a serious tone. And to be honest with you, I think every Marvel movie, even if they set a serious tone in it, like especially with the last Captain America.
That was probably the most serious of all of them.
But they still throw jokes in there. Yeah. Like Falcon threw jokes every now and then. Scarlett Johansson threw jokes every now and then to just keep the, like, to just not get too serious about it. Well, I feel like
they've all taken the lead from Iron Man. They've kept that tone because Iron Man has Jon Favreau, who's known for comedy as an actor and a director, and Robert Downey Jr. And Robert Downey Jr. being funny is what put that movie over the top.
Yeah.
That's what people didn't see coming. That type of characterization of a superhero you had never seen before. And they realize, okay, this mix of action and comedy is working, and you do see it in everything. And that's one of the reasons to pick Joss Whedon, because Joss Whedon's really funny. And that's one of the things that makes Avengers work. I mean, the moments everybody talks about in Avengers are some of the funniest moments in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, and it's something where, like, you know, DC, you know, was really serious with Batman. I understand the Batman's going to be a more serious movie, so that's fine. But then you do something like Superman or even Green Lantern where it's like, they went like, it was like instead of being funny or being witty, they were goofy. And it kind of just brings it, it makes it so unbelievable. And Guardians is
somebody
a movie,
not funny trying to be funny.
Well, yeah, whatever. I mean, but I'm just saying it's just like, it's something where it's like with Guardians, it's a more ridiculous concept, I think, than the Green Lantern Corps. Green Lantern Corps makes sense. It's like a space police. So like, it would make sense that there's a group of aliens patrolling space. Guardians of the Galaxy is like, well, here's like a ragtag group of guys, and this dude's green, and this guy's a tree, and this guy's a talking raccoon, but he's not really a raccoon because he's like a space thing and all this other stuff. It's kind of silly.
Ain't nobody like me but me.
Right. But it's like they make it so it's... it's believable. It's like the characters all felt real. Like Rocket seemed like a real character. Groot even saying the one line over and over again still felt like he had more going on emotionally or character-wise than like any DC movie in the last 2 or 3 years.
And the thing about that is like even when you get introduced to Groot and Rocket goes, he says only three things. I am Groot. And Chris Pratt goes, oh, this is going to get very tiring very soon. Which a lot of people, if you try to explain to someone, who's Groot? Groot's this alien tree. He says three words all the time. And, you know, obviously someone's going to be, like someone negative is going to be like, that sucks. That's going to stink because you're going to get tired. That's a stupid idea that this tree guy says only three words. In that movie, every time he said those three words, it hit. Every single time.
I loved how when Rocket argued with him.
Yeah.
And he was like, but you don't understand. And they would go, I am Groot. Yeah, I see your point about...
Yeah, it's like, so it's,
every time, it was always...
It was like Chewbacca or R2-D2.
Yeah, it was
the audience
the same
can't
kind of
understand
feel.
Him, but the other character completely did. There was a lot of Star Wars in this, now that I think about it. It was that tone. I was shocked by how good they were at world building. Within the first 10 minutes, they created this whole universe, which, yes, exists in the Marvel Universe, but it was 90% brand new. Yeah. I mean, we saw the Chitauri. We saw Thanos on his asteroid that we saw from Avengers. But it was mostly things that we had never seen in any Marvel movie before. But it felt so deep. When they go to nowhere, you felt like, this is only one of, like, 50 places out there. And it was so realized. You never felt confined in this movie.
Yeah, it was something I really liked, is they really took the ball and ran with it, where they were like, okay, well, we need to make the Marvel Universe bigger than just the Avengers. Because right now, every Marvel movie, it's just the Avengers. Because
that's all they got. They don't have Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, or X-Men.
But that's
a huge chunk of the Marvel Universe.
They're missing the big guys, but they still have like 3,000 other characters.
Yeah.
And I think what's nice is they took a gamble on these characters, and they showed what they're showing now. Like you said, 6 months ago or whatever, no one would have known what a Groot and a Rocket Raccoon is. Now it's like, I had 16 kids come in today, and every single one of them wanted to know where the Rocket Raccoon comic was and where the Star-Lord comic was, because it's like...
And Marvel has them.
And they've got them. And it's just like, that's what's so great about it, is they took really D-list characters, when you think about it, and they elevated them to A-list just by making a quality movie. And
wasn't that the original concept of the Avengers?
Exactly. Iron Man was a C or D list character at that point. He wasn't selling well. His cartoon sucked from the 90s. It's just like, that was, no one even knew who he was. Now Iron Man's a household name, arguably on the same level of like Spider-Man and Superman.
Yep. And back in the Silver Age, Avengers, the only reason that team was put together, we said this on the Avengers podcast, those were the books that weren't selling. Spider-Man was selling fine, so he wasn't in the Avengers.
Yeah.
And you're right. It is all about the treatment. I think Iron Man taught them that, because Iron Man had very, very low public recognition before that movie came
totally
out. And I was excited because I loved that character and I loved that book. Most people I know didn't care.
I and was ready to go because I was like, this is gonna be, this is our Avengers, man, this is happening.
He just looked right past it to Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, Tony Stark is great. And then the movie was such a surprise, and I think this, they managed to do this trick twice of, I don't know who these characters are, it looks interesting, oh my God, this is great.
Yeah, I was reading an article today.
And I want more.
And that's what they were saying, is at this point, Marvel's the best brand in Hollywood right now, maybe second only to Pixar, where no matter what comes out from Marvel, if they see that Marvel Studios logo, they're gonna be like, oh, I'll go see it because I liked Avengers, I like Thor, I like Captain America. Yeah.
And I think people are now making the differentiation that Spider-Man and X-Men movies are not Marvel Studios.
Yeah, totally.
But you know, it took Pixar's a great example, because I was thinking about this. Pixar probably had the greatest streak in Hollywood history. It took them a very, very long time to make Cars 2. Eventually, they made Cars 2.
And then bombed, right?
Yeah, eventually they made a bad movie.
But that was their first big
flop. But, like, they had 15 years of just hits that became classic movies.
And that's what I think.
And Marvel's doing that in a period of 5 years, but they're pumping them out. Pixar did a movie every 2 years.
Right. And the Pixar movies always do well in the box office, and I don't know how expensive they are to make compared to, like, live action. But if you think about it, Marvel has two out of the top five grossing movies of all time. Avengers and Iron Man, what, three?
Three, yeah.
I think
made the most money.
And it's just like, that's kind of crazy for a relatively new studio. And I know they have Disney backing them with all the money, but at this point, it's like, you know, Marvel can pretty much, especially after Guardians, I think it was a good test run. Now, what I think is somewhere in a room, there's probably several somebody sitting down and being like, okay, we took Guardians, we made it an A-list property. What else do we own, and what else can we make that can get onto that level?
Well, Doctor Strange is in development right now. Ant-Man is going to happen.
Was in development before.
Yeah.
I think they're going to get even more.
It's
going to
be fast-tracked.
Well, what I love about Guardians is, like, they obviously open you up to the universe.
Totally.
And what's great about it, it's like there's certain concept that you weren't able to accept. And now that it's like Guardians is out there and people like it, they're like, okay, you know that Ronan, that Kree guy? And it's like, yeah, I heard about the Kree in Guardians of the Galaxy. It's like, they made this thing called the Inhumans. And it's just like, what is it? We'll tell you about it in 2017. And like, they could release
an Inhumans movie.
They could release an Inhumans movie. And then they could go
get away with it.
And then when you're like, well, really interested about these like gems, it's like, all right, we're going to give you, they could, if you want, a movie all about Thanos and just have Thanos and just
Adam Warlock.
Explain.
And you got Josh Brolin as Thanos now, so you have your star.
And just explain, like, why Thanos. Like, right now, Thanos is just a background character, and you get an idea about how much of a threat he is. You get an idea.
Yeah.
But it's like, you have, in reality, the viewers that are watching these movies don't know how horrible and, like, how evil or how powerful this character is. Versus the people in the
comic book.
We know what's coming.
And that's
so
they
could release a movie and just be like, here's Thanos. This is why he's going after the gems, and explain that world.
Well, I think that movie is going to be Avengers 3.
Yeah, but
I think you're building up Thanos to be your huge villain, and then you're going to send your big team.
And that's what
after
I think
him.
Is a good thing they're doing.
Because after Ultron, who do you want the Avengers to fight besides Thanos?
Right. Well, I got a list.
Yeah, you got a list that I don't want.
But I think it's something where it's, with Thanos particularly, it's like they're doing such a good job of, like, they're kind of just tickling our asshole with a feather. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, they're just like little snippets here. I mean,
Avengers 1, we get a glimpse. This movie, we get a scene where he's got
any lines.
But it's
even the way people talk about it. Like,
there's
even that scene with Thor and Loki on that mountain where Loki's like, I know the true power of the Tesseract. And Thor's like, who told you this?
Who is the would-be king?
Right.
And it's like,
because
he doesn't say
the Asgardians maybe patrol like a certain sector of space or whatever, and they only take care of like those nine worlds. That's their realm kind of thing. But it's like, they know there's other worlds out there or other civilizations, and they're aware of like this cosmic bad guy. And even in Guardians of the Galaxy, the Nova Corps is like, oh, he's working with the Mad Titan Thanos. And they didn't have like a profile picture of him like they did Ronan. It was like in shadow, because it's like he's a mysterious figure.
Yeah. They might not know what he looks like.
Right. And it's something where it's interesting where it's like he's got this big reputation of like decimating planets and all this other stuff. So it's like when he does show up finally, the anticipation is going to be so huge. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah, it reminds me of this in the old movies they used to. There's this technique called the third man. And basically what it is like, the first half of the movie, you keep talking about this guy. And mm-hmm. it's just like, well, why are you here? It's like, oh, you know, he sent me. I'm like, who is he? It's like, you don't worry about it. And it just like, mysteriously, you just build up this like reputation of whoever this guy is that we haven't seen and don't know exactly what his name is or what he's coming from. He's someone important. And when he shows up later on in that film and he like drops the mic, you're just like, oh, shit.
Yeah, if you haven't seen The Third Man, you should just stop listening to this podcast and go watch it. It's one of my favorite movies. Yeah. But what and you're talking about Orson Welles in that picture. The first time you see Orson Welles, you're an hour into it, and he's in an alley, and a passing car, the headlight hits his face, and he smiles and then disappears, and you're like, oh, my God. And he called that star part. Peter Bogdanovich tells a story about how he saw a play once, and they were talking about Mr. Wu, and no matter what was happening in the story, they said, well, when Mr. Wu gets here, what will Mr. Wu say? And then the act break was the door opened, and an actor stood there, and everyone says, Mr. Wu! And it goes to black, and the whole audience goes, Mr. Wu, that's a great actor.
Yeah.
Because you built him up so much, and they are doing that with Thanos.
And then it's like, it's just like...
And if Orson Welles was alive, he would be Thanos.
Probably.
I need the Infinity Gems.
Yeah, but we got that, but... Let's just, before we break off too much. So what's great about Guardians of the Galaxy is Ragtag Group, five people. And because
it's a heist movie,
not many people know about it. They have a great way of just introducing them and just being like, all right, here's your five guys. Let's give a little backstory to each one. Now they're together and you're along for the ride, which is something like, for me who reads the comics, I'm like, I know all this. Like, I was hoping to get something more. And they gave me more. And it's in that scene with the collector where he explains the Infinity Gems.
Yeah, I think that's a really important scene because, like we were saying earlier, it's like they really opened up the doors to a lot of stuff. And in that scene with the collector, I went to go see it with my roommate Brittany, and she doesn't read comics, she doesn't know anything about this stuff, but she likes the Marvel movies except Thor. So she goes to see all of them except Thor because she knows she's going to get a good product. And so in the scene with the collector, he has like all these images appear of like what the gems are and kind of like their history. So we finally get an idea of what all these things can do. And they show two very important things during that scene. The first one they show is they show a celestial annihilating a planet.
Oh, yeah. I freaked out when I saw a celestial.
Which I never thought I would see on
screen. I would never think I would ever see
and a celestial. And for anyone that's like listening that doesn't know what a celestial is, it's basically they're these like age-old like cosmic characters on par with like Galactus. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is the celestial that destroyed that planet, that's the dude whose severed head they go to. That's Nowhere. That's the mining head that they're in.
And they don't make a big deal about that.
No, they don't. And but it's subtle.
The Celestials are also like the last great Jack Kirby creation.
Totally.
Because they're like mid-70s. They're after he went to DC, after all the Fourth World stuff.
Right.
And before Devil Dinosaur and, you know, the stuff that's really
all that really kind of goofy
like,
stuff.
Like, the Eternals as a book is so-so, but the Celestials
were a great design.
Yeah. And they picked the coolest looking one.
Yeah. And Nowhere
in the book was their main base, and they didn't play that at all.
They made it like a mining station.
They made it Mos Eisley.
Yeah, they used what they needed it to be.
Yeah, they made it a sleazy town.
And then the second thing that the collector shows us, and this is something I was talking to Stu about, because he didn't pick up on it. And I only picked up on it because I had to explain it to Brittany, because she's like, well, who are all those guys? And in one of the things the collector's showing them is there's six guys standing around, and they're all, he's explaining, these are the guys who first harnessed the powers of the gems, the Infinity Stones, and one of them is the collector. So it's like the collector, the runner, the gardener, and there's like two or three other guys, I
think. Forgot what that the guy who had the power.
Yeah, there was like the power gem guy. So it's like the collector's kind of telling them like the history of the gems, and it's really interesting to see because he's telling them his own origin, which means that because they cast Benicio del Toro, we might get a whole movie where, you know, the other gems belong to some of those characters still, and maybe Thanos is going to go and kill them and take them like he did in that Infinity Quest story. Uh-huh. But it was just a really, really subtle but huge, deep history of, like, the Marvel Universe kind of stuff where it's just, like, you know, Avengers hints at aliens, and even Captain America's like, a space army? It's like, what, there's not aliens out there. And even in Thor, they're like, are they Asgardians? Right. Are they gods? Are they aliens?
I remember worrying before Avengers of, like, what they're going to be, and at the time they were going to be Skrulls.
Yeah.
It's like they're going to open this up to to aliens, I don't know how that fits in a universe that you've already established Iron Man in.
Right.
And they made it work.
And it worked.
And once it worked, it's like, well, we've opened that door. Let's step through it. And now that we've stepped through it, let's open seven other doors.
Yeah. And I think, like, I would have liked, I think, a bit more mentioning in the movie of, like, the Centauri or Earth, or that Peter Quill came from that planet where we heard that the Centauri got destroyed and this whole thing happened in Asgard.
Yeah, and there was that scene where Ronan's, like, having a feud with Thanos, and he basically says, like, you know, he gets mad at him. It's like, you dare me? If I come back without the stone, you'll kill me? It's like, you're not that big of a threat. Yeah, it's like, your army got destroyed on Terra. And he's talking about Earth. And he's talking about what happened in the Avengers. Yeah. At that moment, Nebula's like, shut up, dude. He'll kill you.
Yeah.
like, there's just like, you think you know, like, you think you're badass, but like, Thanos would straight up kill you. And that's like when he finally, like, so Ronan, spoilers, whatever, Ronan eventually gets this gem that everyone's going after that the Guardians never even knew they had. And when he takes that on and he puts the gem in, he's like, come on, Thanos. Like, I am now the most powerful thing. What I love is Thanos just smiles and, like, lets it go because he knows,
he lets,
like,
it play out.
Yeah, because he's like,
playing the long game.
Yeah, and
which is why he can wait a whole Avengers movie. He can wait. He can wait for Phase 3.
Yeah, yeah. And he might wait longer than that. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about Marvel. I was just talking about this with my wife. They've had this plan for a long time, but they've given themselves the option of changing it. There was never supposed to be an Iron Man 2 before Avengers 1.
Yeah,
but you know, Iron Man made so much money. They all right, just kept going. Let's get another one out. There was supposed to be a Hulk 2, but Hulk didn't make money.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't thinking about Guardians of the Galaxy when they did Captain America and Thor.
No way.
Like, they
weren't thinking about Avengers when they made the first Iron Man.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just a tease.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
just gauge interest, you know?
Yeah, but they, you know, they're managing to find opportunities.
Yeah, and I think they've got enough opportunities because as much as they're tied to what the comics did, they can take enough liberties to where they're not alienating or offending the fans, which is good. Like, I've talked to a lot of fans of Guardians of the Galaxy, like you said, Dave, you've been reading. I didn't like Groot 2 years ago. I never cared about that character. Now I saw this movie, I'm like, all right, Groot's awesome. So it's something where it's like the fans of the Guardians of the Galaxy, I haven't heard any complaints from them. Oh, Star-Lord wasn't blah blah blah. It's like everyone's on board. Everyone thinks it's great.
And it's like what I love about it, that the reason why I'm on board is just because, like, listen, I could nitpick and argue, and like, I will probably say something. There's only two things I had problem with in the whole entire movie, and I could go, you know, but I could go hardcore fanboy on it. The fact that this movie was so fun, it taught me to just be like, just go with the flow, man. It's like, just enjoy it. It's like, you're getting a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. That was like in a slim chance in hell that you would get a movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, so just enjoy it. Don't nitpick this thing that we're giving you on the big screen.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, they gave me fan service to me by seeing that Celestial, seeing like, when they went and talked about the Infinity Gems and everything like that. And even, like, if you get a chance, I'm pretty sure when it comes out on DVD, you could pause. It may be in the commentary, but there's so many Easter eggs in the collector's hallway.
Oh,
yeah. Like,
even, oh, absolutely.
Like, even, like,
there's a Dark Elf there from Thor the Dark World.
That's what I heard, yeah.
Yeah, there's a Centauri in there, too.
Yep.
And the fact that, like, I'm pretty sure, spoilers, but at the end, like, I'm pretty sure Howard the Duck was in one of those tanks.
No, that's who speaks last. That's the post-credit sequence.
I know.
He's saying, though.
But
if you pause it, you might have seen him.
The collector probably had him in a tank somewhere else on the ship. Or the fact that when the collector sees Groot, the collector knows that that's the last of his kind. Like,
well, he was really interested in it. And I was surprised Rocket. He didn't make a move.
Yeah. But I was surprised too. Like, I could easily be like, all right, I'm going to get this gem, but I'm going to get that Groot.
I want that treat.
Eventually, yeah.
So it's just like, which is something he does. And it's just like, even in Thor, the post-credit sequence when the Asgardians drop off the power gem to the collector. And remember, there's that caterpillar-looking thing, which is what Adam Warlock's going to crack out
it,
of?
It looks, yeah, we don't know what it is, but it looks like the cocoon
Adam
Warlock's
in. Oh, yeah, the
Warlock's
cocoon behind
in.
Him, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was in this movie, really too. They walked past the same thing, so it's like, and that's what you're saying, is like, you could pause that and see all kinds of stuff.
I didn't notice it in Thor, I did notice it in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, even the pawn shop that Star-Lord tries to sell the gem to, if you look in the case, there looks like something that could be the Cosmic Cube, but probably not, because they already used it.
Yeah.
But then it's like, there's an Eye of Agamotto looking thing, there's a Wanda Watoom looking thing, it's like, there's so many
little
things.
Well, that was like in Thor 1, that Odin's Vault had had the Eye of Agamotto, and it had the
Winters,
and yeah.
And it's just like, they have these opportunities to do all this stuff, and there's so many things to put in and drop. It's actually like, they have all the keys to the kingdom, man. They can do whatever they want.
And they're just, you know, and I feel like the reason why they didn't go too much into death is because they're like, all right, those are just things in the future that we could build upon if the situation is right.
Right.
Let's just focus on the Guardians of the Galaxy, making sure people enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, even if you go back to that first Thor, it took me 400 viewings of that movie, but you can see the Infinity Gauntlet in that room.
Yeah.
And they didn't know what they were going to do. Thanos, they were just, throw something in there that looks cool. Yeah. And it's just like, that might never get mentioned, and the Infinity Gauntlet will probably come from somewhere else, but it's like, at the time, it was just a neat thing to see, you know?
Yeah. This is interesting. I'm just starting to notice the dynamic in here. I think out of this room, now that we're talking, I'm probably the least biggest fan. Because, like, you know, like, I've read the run, but I was never that big. I was never that big into the Marvel cosmic stuff. I feel like I kind of came at a different angle. Because as I'm listening to you guys talk, I was like, yeah, I didn't read into that. I was like, we're talking about all the complex things. And then I realized I liked it for how simple it was.
Yeah, and that's like, and
I think that's the best part of it, though.
And that's the best part
both.
About Guardians of the Galaxy. It's like, yes, like, as a fan, they threw all that stuff in there that people can sit in a parking lot after they get out of the movie and just talk about for hours and hours.
Yeah.
But based on movie-wise, how awesome was it? It looked great. Everything looked amazing. The planets looked so different and realistic. The ships were nice and shiny and colorful. Them walking around on different alien worlds and seeing different alien races, very similar to like what we loved about Star Wars when they go into
right.
What's that one bar in the first
the cantina in
the
Mos
cantina
Island.
Yeah. So you had that and just the fact that, like, you know, Peter Quill's going after this little metal sphere, and it felt very Indiana Jones, which is like another great thing for you.
Well, that was the interesting thing, because the references I got, you guys were going very deep into the well of Marvel cosmic and Avengers, and all the references I got were other films that they hadn't quite touched on before. I mean, there was there's a lot of Usual Suspects in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
The five guys that don't get along, that come together to do a heist and botch it.
Yeah,
there's a prison escape movie in the middle of this thing, and towards the end, I realized as I was watching it, I was like, you know what? This is why people love Firefly so much, because Firefly taps into that. There's a huge cosmic world, but this is one cruddy little crew.
Yeah.
That's like barely eking out a living, and that's really funny, and cannot get their shit together for the life of them. And I'm like, they managed to do Firefly on a big budget level. Like, if Joss Whedon had the budget going into that show, he would have said, yeah, three of them are aliens.
Yeah.
But he didn't have the budget, so he's like, there's no aliens. They're just in space, and there's other people.
Right.
But everybody's from Earth. But it had that kind of tone to it, and I realized, yeah, this is why Firefly was such a strong cult, and it's also why Firefly was never a mainstream hit. And they managed to do it while having Joss Whedon in the room.
Right.
Because, as we know, part of his deal for Avengers 2 was for him to be very involved in everything that Marvel's doing until Avengers 2.
Right, so because they know that's going to be their big bread and butter.
So at some point, Joss Whedon's sitting in a screening room going, yeah, you guys are kind of biting on Firefly.
He's like, I wanted to do this.
All right.
Or maybe his influence just gave it that Firefly feel.
Maybe it's a little take Peter Quill and make him a little more Nathan Fillion. A little more Mal.
I think his influence helped, because I feel like, I don't know, it could have been where it's just like, I got this going on, but I just don't have this group dynamic. What do I do? And it's like, just watch a few episodes of Firefly. Do you want to rent the movie Serenity? I got it on Blu-ray. It's just like, just watch that.
I own the rights.
Real quick, I got to say something before I forget. You know what's so great about this Marvel movie? It's unheard of. Female writer for science fiction.
I heard, yeah. I read.
And it's just like, and I really...
The first for Marvel.
The first for Marvel, but, like, in all honesty, it's very rare to find a woman to write a screenplay for science fiction.
It's rare to find women writing comics, even. Yeah. I mean, there's only a few right now. There's a Kelly Sue DeConnick, Gail Simone.
Yeah.
Not a lot.
Like, I can't stress it enough, the fact that, like, what happened was the woman that writes the script, she pitched science fiction concepts before, and they get greenlit, but they never had her write it. They're like, wouldn't you prefer writing a romantic comedy? And she'll just be like, no, I want to write this science fiction. And she's written biopics before about scientists and other famous people. So Marvel created, this is a long time ago when they were gearing up and starting up the studios, Marvel created this program where it's like, we're going to take these writers, screenwriters, as you know, and we're going to have them work together and try and pitch us ideas in the future. She pitched, they were throwing ideas out, and one of them was Guardians of the Galaxy. And I'm pretty sure in the description was like space, science fiction. And she took it, and Marvel was like, you sure you want to do science fiction? She's like, yeah, I want to do science fiction. And Marvel was like, all right, run with it. Pitch it to me. She pitched it, did a first draft, got a director. Then her and the director looked over the script to make sure they get everything right.
Yeah, because James Gunn is credited as a writer.
Right, yeah. But and here we are. It's like, that's the other amazing thing about Guardians of the Galaxy. It's like the first draft, written by a woman writing science fiction, which is unheard in just Hollywood standards alone.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's so great, because Marvel's just like, they're just wing-ding it.
That's the best thing about Marvel, is that they're constantly reaching for people that aren't known for doing superhero movies, but come from something else, and they're using their strengths to make it work. So you have Kenneth Branagh, who's known for doing Shakespeare, to do Thor, who's, you know, very high and lofty. You have Jon Favreau, who's known for doing improv and comedy, bringing that to Iron Man.
Yeah.
You know, you have Joss Whedon, who's known for quirky little ensemble pieces, and you give him the biggest movie in the world.
And that to me was like the biggest thing. It was like, you know, it's kind of a fanboy dream to be like, Joss Whedon should do the Avengers. And then obviously you're
it
like,
does, yeah.
The Avengers is going to be the biggest movie for Marvel. They're going to have to give it to, like, and this, I'm just saying something, but they'll be like, you got to give it to someone that can handle blockbusters, like Michael Bay, Steven Spielberg. Throw those names around. And Marvel was like, no, Josh knows what he's doing. He's really familiar with the material. Let him do it. He's done and because when, like, yeah. like Hollywood was looking, I remember reading articles where they were just looking like, is Josh Whedon the right director for Avengers?
Because he'd only done one feature, which was Serenity, and it was very small budget, and it didn't do well because everybody who was already into the show saw it, and no one else saw it.
And then the other thing, too, is just like he's only been known for TV, so they were just saying, can he handle a big budget movie? And not only did he handle it, he knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, he really did.
And James Gunn is an independent director. Mm-hmm. He's done what?
Slither. You ever see Slither? Slither?
Yeah, he's done Slither. Slither's
great. And
he's
done
Super. And it's just, those are very indie movies.
I have to
and
see
here
Super.
We are giving him Guardians of the Galaxy. And this guy knocks it out of the park.
But he's got that quirky, over-the-top sense. Kind of like he's kind of in that Sam Raimi vein of like going really far. And it's like, and the kind of people he picks. Like Michael Rooker is in Slither.
Yeah.
And he has a huge part in Guardians of the Galaxy is Yondu.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's just coming off Walking Dead. So he's like, he also had this, that was a thing that really impressed me about this movie. When I heard about all the characters that are in it, like Karen Gillan's going to be Nebula, I was like, she'll be in it for 2 minutes. But everybody has enough weight that I'm like every character in it, I'm like, I'm surprised I've seen so much of this person. Like,
yeah.
And they all fit into the overall plot.
And let's just break it down a little more. Your lead character, your lead actor is Chris Pratt, who at the time has only been known for like Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec. Yep.
Yes, he did. He had a small part in, that movie where they're looking for Bin Laden, Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah.
He had a small part in Zero Dark Thirty. Parks and Rec. He was in Everwood. He was in that movie, Take Me Home Tonight. He's mostly known for a comedic actor, and he's husky.
And the Lego movie, which came out just a couple months before. Yeah.
But, like, he's husky. And then, so this is Chris Pratt. He's your lead. You know who Hollywood would have gone with
Tom
the lead?
Cruise.
Tom Cruise or Bradley Cooper.
Bradley
Cooper. And you know what they use Bradley Cooper for? His voice for Rocket.
And I actually had a hard time recognizing his voice because it wasn't...
Well, he's doing a character.
Totally, but yeah, it's just typically, like, even, like, watching, we were watching the Lego movie the other night, and it's like, I was like, oh, this is this guy, and Liam Neeson, or whatever. It's like, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that was Bradley Cooper if I didn't know. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah, I could hear it every now and then, but I actually had to focus on it to hear it. And even Vin Diesel, like, I heard a little Iron Giant in there.
Yeah.
But I forgot Vin Diesel was on set because... it was a good idea for Vin Diesel to be on set because there's a lot of subtle moves in there. We were talking just a couple weeks ago about what Andy Serkis did in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Vin Diesel's doing a lot in that motion
capture. And that's something that people don't associate with Vin Diesel. They go, Vin Diesel, oh, Gone in 60 Seconds. And that's not Gone in 60 Seconds, Fast and the Furious.
Triple X.
Oh, yeah, Triple X. And they're like, this is who Vin Diesel is. And a lot of people don't give him enough credit. And here he is in Guardians of the Galaxy, staying in for Groot and doing those lines, and he nails it, and he does a great job. Dave Bautista, he's a wrestler, and he's in this movie.
He was great.
Yeah, that was actually an interesting, because I just started reading the Annihilation Omnibus, where they kind of revamp what Drax was, because he was a horrendous character from the
70s. He was a big, dumb character.
Yeah.
And he wore like a bad Golden Age type.
He wore like an 80s wrestling.
He looked terrible.
Well, he had like a Martian Manhunter collar and a big cape, and he had like a Golden Age Widow's Peak head sock.
Yeah.
He was a joke. Even in Infinity Gauntlet, he's a joke.
Oh, totally. But I think it was something in this movie where even giving him the small personality trait of like, look, whatever species Drax is, he's a literal thinker. He doesn't get, like, you can't talk what's that word I'm looking for, like,
metaphorically.
You can't talk metaphorically. Well, that, he doesn't know what you're talking about.
And that's one of my favorite scenes is when they're describing him. They're like, no, you can't talk to him. Things go over his head. Nothing goes over my head. My reflexes are too sharp.
Yeah. And it's just like, it was awesome. It was just such a good
spin. He was great. And I hadn't seen, and you know, whenever I hear a wrestler is playing this part,
I throw up in my mouth.
You know, I think of Tyler Mane in X-Men 1, and I think of Bane.
Triple H in Blade 3.
Yeah, or Bane and Batman and Robin.
How about Kevin Nash as a super shredder in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2?
Yeah, awesome. Yeah.
You're getting a guy because he's big. You did not think twice about whether or not he could act.
They can only act screaming at each other.
They give him a lot to do. And at times I'm thinking, like, well, why do you need Drax in this movie? Because you have Gamora, who's very athletic and good with knives, and you have Groot, who's kind of dumb and strong.
Yeah.
Why do you need Drax in here? But he brings something else to it.
Yeah, he's just like another mix.
He brings a different flavor that neither one of them completely control. And I love how he screws everything up in Nowhere, where he's just like, no, I'm sick of waiting for Ronan, so I'm going to bring him here.
I just love that he's drunk when he does it. He's just like, I'm never going to get Ronan. And then he looks and he sees someone like transmitting a message. He's like, all right, I know how to do it.
And he has that fight. He has that drunken fight with Rocket. And Rocket's so drunk he can't put it together. It's exactly like I was just saying. I was watching the documentary on Johnny Carson.
Oh, yeah.
And they showed Dave, I don't know if you were here when we were telling this story. They showed the night that Ed McMahon was bombed in front of the camera. And he's trying to... He's trying to get through it and pretend that he's sober, and he just starts like he keeps interrupting Johnny, and he's like, we're gonna have Joan Embry from the San Diego Zoo. Come on, I know who Joan is. I know. I went to zoo. You didn't go to zoo. You didn't go. All right. That's fine. And he's like, no, you don't say that. You don't. And he did. And Big Man gets like real sad for a second. He goes, don't say that.
Right.
And it was like he couldn't. He just couldn't keep it together. And Bradley Cooper does that in that scene.
Yeah.
When he's like, you called me a rodent. And he breaks down. And it wasn't just a jokey drunk scene.
No, the two most emotional parts in the movie had to be when Bradley Cooper explains how being called a rodent and what's the other word he was?
Vermin.
Vermin. Like how that hurts him. Yeah. And he goes on and he just like in a drunk manner, he's just like... You don't know. It's like, I didn't ask to be this. They, like, took me apart. And it's just like he's explaining
And they don't
it.
Get into and that. Chris, you see like, the bolts in his subtle. Back at one
it's
point.
It's subtle.
Yeah.
And you see in this, you see it in the you know, the way they animate Rocket in that moment. And his eyes just, like, start tearing up. And Chris Pratt is seeing this as a human. And it's just like, you don't get it. Like, they took me apart, put me back together. And, like, I'm thinking in my head, I think Rocket was alive during all that. Like, he experienced what it was like to have, like, his back opened up and robot parts being put in and everything.
And we just saw that in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes with Koba.
Yeah.
And that got us to side with Koba, as evil as that character gets.
So, like, they do that, and then, like, Chris Pratt is like, holy shit, like, this is like serious. And then the movie, just the right moment, switches off from that and goes back to fun to give you more like more in stake in that character and in this group now. And the other moment was when Groot, there's a scene when they're in a ship and they're about to crash and Groot extends himself around them.
Yeah.
To protect everybody.
To protect everybody. And, you know, like, and it's like, and everyone's like, oh my God, Groot, like, what are you doing? And then Rocket knows what he's doing. Groot's sacrificing himself to protect
this group. It's a Wrath of Khan moment.
Yeah. And then he's just like, what are you doing, Groot? What are you doing? And like, yes, he does say something else besides I am Groot, but he says, we are Groot. And when he says that, when he says that, you're just like, we are Groot. That means like we're all family, like we're all together. And it just gave so much meaning to that.
That was really cool.
Yeah, and it's, and those are two CG characters. Those like it's not.
And I think that's something to credit Marvel with, is they're doing something else that's a bit more subtle that maybe a lot of people aren't picking up on right now. But Captain America, Winter Soldier, isn't a superhero movie. It's a spy thriller.
Right.
And Thor isn't a superhero movie as so much as it was, at least in the beginning of the movie, was kind of like a Lord of the Rings. It's like they're expanding out into different genres
and,
now.
And as you said, this is a space movie.
It's a sci-fi movie.
It's a sci-fi movie, but it's also a heist movie.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. They're doing so many different things now that they're not... where like Fox and Warner Brothers and all these other idiots making superhero movies, they're just going with the same formula. Superheroes, capes, fights, blah, blah, blah. And Marvel's like, all right, let's take superheroes and then put them into a category of a movie that... You know, and make it work. Like, all right, let's take the Guardians of the Galaxy, but don't make it a super movie in space because that doesn't make sense. Let's make it a sci-fi heist movie in space with a prison break in it. It's like that works. That's what people want to see. You got to make it relatable.
It's new. It's new. As long as you can pull it together. Yeah, and I feel like we do this with almost every Marvel movie to the point where I think we should just stop comparing it to DC because I feel like at this point DC's not going to get it.
We should. Like, on the internet.
The crazy thing is that this stupid Batman versus Superman movie, which none of us are going to see for 2 years and none of us say we're going to like, every time they give us a kernel of something, the internet goes crazy. Oh, they're showing us Wonder Woman. Oh, they showed us a profile of Ben Affleck's Batman suit. And it's like, all right, I'm interested, but you know what? Guardians of the Galaxy, they showed me a lot more before I saw the movie and got me interested in that movie. They weren't jerking me around for the next year and a half. I'd rather compare this to other Marvel movies, which I've liked, than this movie I don't think I'm going to like and that they're not marketing well enough.
Well, I just look at it. It's like there's no point to even like bring it up or talk or try and relate this to anything else because the movie's not coming out
for some time.
Why do we need to talk about like the Batman image where he looks sad or the Superman image where it's raining and he looks sad or like,
I will say that the one thing they're doing right is
they're making them look really sad.
Yeah,
that's true. But they're also timing it where every time Marvel has a big thing, they give us just a little piece of it. It was like when Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. took off and then they had the season finale and they finally got it back together. That was the day they showed us the Batmobile.
Yeah.
So like DC's watching Marvel and going, how can we steal their thunder with the one movie we got?
See, and to me, I'm just like, that's just like, it's pathetic.
It is, and it's getting annoying, actually.
And like, I'm just like, whatever. Listen, I'm not going to even think about this movie till like they show me a trailer.
Yeah, once that's the big thing I tell people.
And they pushed it back. It's not even coming out next year.
Yeah, here we are talking about it.
But I'm saying it's just like, everyone's like, oh, San Diego this, San Diego that. And it's like, that's why I hate San Diego convention because it's like, everyone's so crazy to go see like 4 minutes of grainy footage from like a cell phone and it's just like wait 6 months and you'll have the fucking trailer. Who cares?
Honestly, this is the first year, and we're actually covering San Diego.
A little bit.
This is the first year where I was actually excited by announcements in the comics, where Mark Waid is writing an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. comic.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it.
It's pretty awesome.
That's awesome. Batman 66 found a lost Harlan episode script that he wrote for the series, which was going to introduce Two-Face onto the Adam West show. It never happened, but that script is going to be a one-shot issue drawn by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez.
Did they say who they were going to cast as Two-Face?
No, my guess, they showed some preliminary drawings that Garcia Lopez did, and he's honestly drawing like a Carmine Infantino Batman.
Okay.
He might change it for the book. He wasn't even drawing an Adam West. He was drawing a Silver Age story, so it could just be a Silver Age looking Two-Face. But those were the things that actually got me excited. And there's always good toy news. Like, Marvel Legends showed a lot of really cool stuff. Mezco is doing this crazy Batman that's like half Hot Toys, half Marvel Legends. So but you know, as far as the movies and the TV shows went, I was like, yeah, okay, this is all the same stuff we're talking about. It's fun to be there because it's fun to be in the room and see everybody, you know. And yeah, it's fun when Tom Hiddleston comes out dressed as Loki and addresses the crowd.
Yeah,
you know, it's fun to see Matt Groening talk to a CG Homer on stage.
Right,
but it's like in terms of being home, like. What it means for big announcements. They didn't announce a big movie.
They
showed some footage of Batman vs. Superman, which we didn't
see. Did they announce? No, they announced the sequel to Guardians of the Galaxy. Didn't they say it's Guardians of the Galaxy Annihilation?
No. I just heard Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
That's a rumor.
Yeah, they're picking up the rumors and running with it. That's what we're talking about. Like,
that's what I hate about.
People that are saying Thor 3 is Ragnarok and.
Those are just easy assumptions. Yeah. Like I said,
and you know, Marvel,
those Warner Brother pictures, don't believe anything till you see an actual trailer for it.
And all of these Marvel movies, we were talking about this with the Avengers movie, but I realized this with all of them. They don't adapt anything. Captain America was called the Winter Soldier. It was not the Ed Brubaker story.
Yeah, it was. They mined the comics basically, Winter Soldier is a concept that works.
It's mostly for tone. It's like it's like Iron Man 3 had Extremis in it, but it is not Warren Ellis's Extremis graphic novel.
Yeah,
but the thing is, it's just that like with comic books, you have that time because it's like 6 issues to tell a storyline. You get 6 issues, 32 pages per issue, or 24 pages per issue, and then 22. you also have the art to help along with the story, and you're able to make huge jumps, which you can in film. And the reason why it's not an exact adaptation is because you could get a lot more away with comic books. You're able to tell more information, give more backstory, link to previous stuff in other comic books. Mm-hmm. And right now, the Marvel Universe, all they have is their movies. Like, yes, it's based off of comic
books.
But
they are doing that. They're linking back to other movies, and they're
able
still
to go,
self-contained.
Yeah, they're able to go back and be like, all right, well, this happened in Iron Man, so this is why this is happening. And in Captain America, that's why Hydra came back, because that was what he was fighting the first
time. And then you have Agent S.H.I.E.L.D. picking this up. So they're fighting extremist soldiers, and they're dealing with Hydra from the fallout of these movies.
Yeah, it's something that's interesting. It's like every movie helps either introduce a new property or just like further the cause. Like Guardians of the Galaxy, obviously we're going to get a sequel where they'll go and find out more about Peter Quill's origin and deal with all that Spartax
stuff. We might get Adam Warlock in it.
Yeah,
like
Cosmo showed up.
There's a big tease at the end about Peter Quill's father.
Yeah. Right, that's what I'm saying. You know, that'll be the next movie.
And they said he's part alien. I don't know enough about the comics, so I don't know
who Spartax.
He's Spartax, that's his dad.
Is that a new character? Because I've never heard of Spartax.
No, it's just some space. It's some goofy space stuff. Basically, it means he's called Star-Lord because his mom knows his dad's from space. She named him Star-Lord because he's from the stars and his father is royalty, so he's actually the heir to the Spartax Empire but wants nothing to do with it. But like Cosmo showed up, so it's like he could join the team, or they could figure out how to make that character work. They did the whole Nova Corps. We're gonna get a movie just about the Nova Corps now.
And maybe, let's go back into Guardians. How cool was it to see like John C. Reilly is part of the Nova Corps. Glenn Close
for 5 minutes.
Yeah,
because they know these
Nova
movies are worth
Prime,
doing.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it's like it's Nova Prime's always like a big muscle bound hero dude, and they're like, nah, Glenn Close.
Well,
that's the choices I really like.
And I completely saw that. I was like, it's like, yeah, Glenn Close is Nova Corps, and I feel like there's a moment. Like, I thought, in the end, you know, heroes save the day and everything like that, and then Yondu shows up and he's like. And then Yondu was going to be like, give me that thing. Give me that thing you guys have. I was hoping that like Nova Prime would show up and Glenn Close would just be like, Yondu, what are you doing here? And then you would see that Yondu knows Nova Prime and just like...
Even that, if you think about it, if they wanted, they could do in the next movie, Yondu forms the quote-unquote Guardians of the Galaxy, and then you do the classic Guardians from the 80s, like Martin X and Charlie 27.
Uh-huh.
Just have Yondu be like, oh, no, I know you guys heard about the Guardians of the Galaxy, save that planet, the Nova. We're the Guardians of the Galaxy. And he lies about it because he's a scumbag, and now you've got a whole other group running around saying they're the Guardians of the Galaxy, and it's just like a bunch of criminals.
Yeah. I also love the recasting of the Nova Corps because... when you look at them as a comic, how are these guys not the Green Lantern Corps? And in this movie, it goes, because they're S.H.I.E.L.D. in space.
Yeah.
And I loved that turn where they were like, okay, we're not going to this is a quick comparison to DC that we're not going to do. In the same way like Quicksilver in X-Men Days of Future Past, I don't think we're going to see the Flash in the Flash's TV show do any of the things that we saw Quicksilver.
Yeah, I think it's something with the Nova Corps. This was the hint of what the Nova Corps could be, just like what in Iron Man, you got a hint of what S.H.I.E.L.D. was. Like, all right, it's an agency, they're secret, they're out there, they're doing other things. You get little droplets of it. Mm-hmm. I think we will get the Nova Corps where they're like, look, we're the Asgardians for the sector of space. We patrol this sector. The Nova Corps takes care of these group of planets. The Asgardians take care of these group of planets.
And then honestly, it could be just because there were no Asgardians there. Like, they're just like, they could have been like, they could be a race of people that were just like, all right, we go off to space now. Oh, there's other planets. Let's help them out. And then just like slowly the Nova Corps builds the same way the Asgardians build. And it's just like, they just, the reason they're like, it's completely different sectors.
The universe
of space
is so big, and that's what I'm saying. What's interesting is they didn't mention Asgard, they didn't mention Niflheim or whatever, all that other nonsense, because it's like those are all planets so far out the Nova Corps doesn't even know they exist.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. And
it's the same thing with the DC universe. You don't have the Green Lantern Corps attacking Darkseid very often.
Yeah,
because the universe is that big.
It's too big. And that's another interesting thing is we saw the Kree, we saw Ronin, we didn't see the Supreme Intelligence. Like, there's so many different things they can build on.
And like I said, that's the best part about this movie. It's its opening door. So it's just like, you could be, like I said, we could have an Inhuman movie in the future. We could have a Nova Corps movie in the future.
Yeah.
And this is like such exciting things. And it's, you got to be so grateful for Marvel taking a gamble on Guardians and it hitting big.
Yeah.
$94 million for a weekend. The movie has been budgeted to cost $170. And so far with domestic and overseas, it's $160 million. It's going to make its money back to
by Wednesday
by making it, and it's going to make profit. So
yeah.
Marvel I saw like the reason why they greenlit the sequel. And like, yeah. We haven't even gotten into more detail about the movie. Like the soundtrack, how great was the soundtrack? To boost all the comedy. And
there was a nice explanation for that too, because they used all this mid-70s stuff, and they set it starts in 88.
Yeah,
so it's like none of the music he would have been listening to, but it was another tie back to his mother.
Yeah,
because I'm sure there were discussions of like, hey, what's in 1988? Let's play Rattle and Hum, and let's play Lou Reed's New York, and let's play Sting's Nothing Like the Sun. And they're like, nah, let's do I'm Not in Love.
Yeah. And what I love about it is they tell you, like, because he was, what, 8 years old in the beginning of the movie? This is all music his mom did, because this is all music his mom was listening to in the car. And he just sat in the back. And, like, his mom was making those
ultimate
mix. That's a nice
plot point with the gift.
Yeah.
Was that
yeah.
The gift was all this new music from that period that he's never heard.
Which is awesome.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week. What was your favorite thing in the movie?
The ending.
Just like the big fight with Ronan.
The post-credit sequence or the whole third act?
The end when they take on Ronan, because if you try to explain it to someone how the movie ends, they would not believe you.
Yeah, that happened.
I know, but just take that away. Just like, honestly, if the way the movie ends, spoilers, so they can't beat Ronan. They can't physically beat Ronan. So there's a scene where it's like Ronan's there and he's about, and they already did the thing they thought could take him out by hitting him with like a nuclear missile and doesn't do anything. His ship crashes. He's still alive. And it's like, ah, shit. And then it's like Ronan's there about to kill them. Chris Pratt starts singing a song and he's like, just listen to the lyrics. And then all of a sudden he starts like, Ronan's like, what are you doing? And he's like, dance off. And he just starts dancing it and he tries to give it to Gamora. And Gamora doesn't want to do the dance off with him because it's the most ridiculous thing you could think of.
Well, it's all a diversion.
Yeah, and then he's like, it's like diversion, bitch. And he gets hit.
I think he calls him a turd bucket.
Yeah,
it's just like, yes. And that's something great, because it's like it furthers that Star-Lord character about just being like, he has no fucking idea what he's doing at all.
He is winging it.
Again, it comes back to that Han Solo, Mal Reynolds.
Just making it up as they go. Yeah. I say my favorite thing is when the collector shows them all about the history of the gems, because it's so much more than I thought I was going to get in the movie, because we're already getting the five Guardians of the Galaxy. You get the collector. You get Nebula. You get Thanos. you get, it's just like, it was so many characters thrown, Ronin and Nova Prime and all these other characters. We're talking like dozens and dozens of Marvel characters that I never thought we would see on screen, thrown into the screen and done really, really well. And just seeing that, like, celestial thing just decimate the planet, I would have fucking... We saw Cosmo.
Yeah.
If I told you 3 years ago you'd see Cosmo the dog in a big budget movie and he would look exactly like it did in the comic, your brain would have microwaved.
I forgot he was in the comic, and then I was like, oh, that's a good idea. And then I went back and looked at the comics, so I was like, of course, this guy's been in the whole run.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I love that there's people out there that just don't understand like how cool it is, that dog.
Well, she, my roommate, she was just like, what's with the dog? And I'm like, well, that's Cosmo. He's like a Russian dog that gets abducted and he's out in space, and I think he has like superpowers or something.
Yeah, he can talk.
She's just like, okay. And then she's like, that's dumb. And then like the lab gets destroyed when the gem goes off, and she's like, is the dog okay? And I'm just like, he'll be fine. He's got superpowers.
He's got this.
My favorite part was one joke that came back, and was when in the heist, Rocket's planning the whole heist. He's like, I've escaped from 22 prisons. He's like, we got to do this. And there's two jokes that really work in that same sequence, so I'm kind of hedging my bet. First is the joke that while he is constructing this intricate plan, he's like, we got to get that timer, and we got to get it last, because all hell's going to break loose. While that's happening, Groot is just in the background reaching up and pulling off the timer and ruining the entire plan.
Yeah.
But the best thing, he's like, we need that guy's prosthetic leg. And there's a whole like little subplot in that sequence of Star-Lord trying to get this guy's leg, and then they get to basically their ship. What's they're gonna take off from the prison? He's like, "Here's the leg." He's like, "That thing? I don't need that thing."
I thought it'd be funny
that guy hopping around.
Yeah, two things on that note.
And then that comes back later when they're planning with Yondu's with Yondu's crew, and he's like, "Okay, we need this and these." He's like, "Hey, you need that guy's eye."
Well, it's
someone's like he doesn't need your eye. He's like, and he's trying
to keep it together.
He breaks. He's like, "No, I really do. I can't do that. Your eye."
There were two things in that scene that were perfect, and the first one was, he's like, all right, I need that guy's prosthetic leg, and you think, oh, Star-Lord's gonna jump a cripple and steal his leg, and then, like, the next thing, Star-Lord's like, dude, I need your leg. He's like, what for? He's like, no, dude, I'll, like...
They just cut, and the guy goes, you need my what? And
yeah,
then
they cut away. He asks him. He doesn't beat him up and try to take it, like, well, would have been a cheap way out.
He says, I had to give that guy 30,000 credits.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. It was such a smarter move than just, I'm gonna beat this guy up and take his leg. He was a nice dude about it. And then the second thing, one of the guys at the shop showed us, there's this funny, I don't know what the website's called, but it's basically like text from superheroes or something. And it's like the text box and like a smartphone with like the picture of the character. And it's a group message to all the Avengers and the Guardians of the Galaxy. And like, quick, we've got to beat Thanos. And Black Widow sends a message to Winter Soldier, and she says, Rocket says he needs your cybernetic arm to help beat Thanos. And Winter Soldier's like, what does he need the arm for? It's like, not sure. He's just adamant that we need it. And it's just like... It's the Hail Hydra joke from Captain America. Everyone's running with it online, and I think great. That's awesome.
So, is this the movie of the summer?
Oh, yeah, it clearly is.
Yeah. I really liked Godzilla. Would be the only other one I thought was, like, as good. Guardians of the Galaxy was phenomenal.
Yeah, I thought Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was really smart and really well done, but it wasn't as much fun. And I mean, Captain America was great, but it came out so early.
It was early. It's like April.
It was April. I don't think we can count it.
I thought Edge of Tomorrow was going to be the movie of the summer, and Guardians just knocked it out.
I haven't seen Edge of Tomorrow yet. But as always, you can follow me and on my book. That is our Twitter feed. There are people adding, and I love all of you, Hurt by the Cold. You guys are great. Keep adding us. The Facebook page, we're adding people left and right. And we're posting a lot. We're constantly posting news there and starting to take polls. So... you know, and you people that are following, anytime you want, just jump in on the comments. Start telling us what you think, because you're the people that don't have microphones in this room.
Yeah.
Thanks again, and if you're listening to us, maybe you've listened to Bill on the Seattle Geekly, or maybe you're finding us on Facebook. Welcome, and just keep listening. Dave, you are on in person and online at...
19 South LaGrange Road, LaGrange, Illinois.
Kamara's Comics.
Why now you stole his?
Not a library, a place to purchase comics, not sit and read all day.
Purchase them and then leave.
It was a rough day.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.